Last week was my wife's birthday. I considered flowers, but you know what they say. The bigger the bunch, the more trouble you're probably in. So I took her out to dinner instead. She's the sort of girl who likes a bit of panelling on a boat, so I booked us into a Jacobean country house and hoped for the best. I needn't have worried. The breathalyzer-defeating taxi was prompt and didn't smell like an ashtray. The petit four melted in the mouth, and when the sommelier opened the burgundy to accompany the wild duck from the local dawn flight, I knew we'd struck gold. It was only as she sat back with her coffee that her right eyebrow lifted an eighth of an inch. I'd seen that look before. All through the evening, I'd been getting acquainted with a Dutch old master depicting fishing craft manned by chaps in funny hats. Jolly good it was, too, squarely hung above the 7-foot oak dado over her shoulder and chock full of the right stuff. Blowing like the clappers, all the bunting flying in the same direction, nobody mysteriously sailing straight into the wind, and seas to give any sailor nightmares. The lady wife had been less fortunate in her outlook. "The only thing wrong with the decor here," she announced, "is the rubbish for keeping the inspectors happy. I can't believe it's allowed. This room is a national treasure, and look what they've done to it." I craned my neck round to check and nearly choked on my port. Tastefully graunched into the unique plaster cornices of a ceiling that had survived open fires and candlelight for the thick end of 4 centuries was a nasty plastic smoke detector. Apparently unsatisfied with this desecration, the representative of Democracy in Action from Health and Safety had also insisted on a helpful illuminated sign over the only door. It showed, guess what, a human form running. Safely back in the cab, she fulminated for several minutes about how the house had managed to stand all those years without these moronic protections. Then suddenly she started to laugh. She'd seen some obscure connection with an incident described to us 35 years ago in the back bar of the old Jolly Sailor at Burselden. In those days, this minuscule snuggery saw a very different clientele from today. Salt Sea sailors all, they included a retired Captain RN who alleged he'd been set backwards by the tide in the Pentland Firth while his destroyer logged 15 knots through the water. A gent with a double-barrelled name who sailed in penniless from the Western Ocean just so he could plunder Moody's skip for goodies. There was a shipwright with a Yangtze River steam gunboat who ran honest merchandise to the Low Countries on dark nights. And there was Les. Les owned a 55-foot pilot cutter built in the 1890s. He stood 5'6" in his sea boots and he had a physique like Charles Atlas. He didn't have many teeth, but he played the guitar, sang like an angel, and the ladies loved him. One windy day, Les was racing the ancient cutter hard when the time came for him to visit the heads. She always leaked a bit close-hauled, but his morale took a serious knock when he stepped down into cold water sloshing around the companionway steps. He could hear it gushing in from somewhere forward, so he waded up to the forecastle. Here, to his relief, he discovered that he hadn't sprung a plank after all. A porthole halfway between wind and water had been left open. It was on the downhill side, and a 6-inch diameter column of the briny was ripping in at fire hose pressure. Always a man of action, Les leapt to the scuttle to force it shut, and straight away found out why this hadn't been done in the first place. The wing nut had dropped off the end of the bolt so it wouldn't dog down. There was no sign of it, so the only way to staunch the catastrophic ingress was physically to lean on the glass. Like the little Dutch boy with his finger in the dike, Les hung on waiting for help, but nobody came. He shouted, but such was the racket of wind and wave on deck that he cried out in vain. It was 2 hours before someone took the initiative to tack. This shifted the hull to the uphill side and Les stomped off to find a nut in his bits box. Then he went up to give the hands hell, and quite right too. He'd been breaking his neck down there, and all that rushing water hadn't helped one bit. Very funny, I agreed, imagining poor old Les with his eyes standing out of their sockets. But what's that got to do with the defilement of that lovely room? I've just remembered why we didn't code our boat, she said. They wanted us to stick up notices beside every porthole and the teak skylight I'd just varnished, saying, "Not to be opened at sea." How right she was. We'd decided that if the regulations were so boneheaded as to outlaw the use of a scuttle to let in the breeze on a calm day, we'd rather have nothing to do with them, thank you very much. Les knew a thing or two about an open porthole. like the 20 or so generations who had contrived to survive in our restaurant without a flashing picture of a running man. He didn't need a sign to tell him when to shut it.